Have you ever had a time in your life where you just felt completely alone? That you were wrestling through something, you were dealing with an issue, it might have been a health issue, it might have been a relationship issue, it might have been a money issue, it might have been something else, and you just felt totally alone. I mean, you weren't actually alone, there were other people around, but you felt alone. And yes, you could have talked to them, but they wouldn't have understood. They didn't know you well enough. They didn't have the background to understand, or maybe they knew too much about you, and that worried you as well. And so you didn't feel like you could trust them. You didn't feel like you could share it with them. I mean, I've certainly had that in my life. I would have bet that one or two of you have had that at some point as well. And the thing is that in times like that, when we're in a place like that, we lack the thing I think we need most. Someone that we can count on. Someone who we can actually be open with, be honest with, share the reality of our situation. Allow that person to see us, to see where we are, and not worry. Not worry about what they're going to think. Not worry that they're going to use it against us someday. But those kind of relationships are really hard to find. Really hard to find. I think that's why most of us don't have relationships like that in our lives. If you do have one of those relationships, please be grateful for it, because it is rare. Because those relationships are hard to build, and they take time. They literally take years to build relationships like that. So this week, as we continue our series that I've called Follower, I want to talk about that issue of how do we build meaningful, deep relationships in our lives that we can really, really lean on. Because what we find is that when we're kids, making friends is a little bit easier. I'm not saying that every kid has tons of friends, but as kids, we tend to have friends. Some kids have lots of friends. Some kids have, you know, one or two close friends. But as we get older, this idea of friendship starts to slip away. And when I talk about friendship, I'm not talking about, you know, kind of social friendships where you go to lunch or you kind of get together to see a movie. As we start to move into this idea of friendship as an adult, one of the things we really need are close friends. Friends that we can talk to in those moments when that you're in that darkness that I described in the beginning, where you feel so alone, you feel unseen, you feel unheard. So what does that have to do with following Jesus? Well, Jesus actually puts a pretty high value on friendship. And remember that in this series, what we're talking about is that, what does it mean to follow Jesus? What does that look like? What does that sound like? Because Jesus calls us to follow, meaning that he calls us to listen to his teachings, to apply them in our lives, to live out our lives like he did. And the thing I want to look at this morning is that how much he actually valued friendship, but also how much he actually ingrained this idea of friendship in his followers. Now, I looked up some data this week, and according to the research that I was reading, 1 in 3 men, so adult men, have no close relationships in their life. Women do a little better, but still many women have no close relationships in their life. You know, I've had periods in my life where I have no close relationships other than my wife. And of course, being close with your spouse is super important, but we need something beyond that, because sometimes the thing you need to talk about is an issue with your spouse. That's never happened to me personally, but I hear some people struggle with that sometimes, right? But we need to have a place to be open and be honest, right? We need to have a place where we can actually say what we're really feeling, and that requires a close friendship, people that we can be with. So what I want to look at today as we go through the message is two things. One is, how does Jesus model what a close, meaningful, deep relationship looks like? But then also, how do you create one of those in your life? How have I created those in my life? And what is the process to do that? And it turns out that Jesus kind of walks us through it. Although, it's not one of the easiest things to see. But one first scripture I would look at here is that Jesus shows us how important he thinks friendship is. Because Jesus, as he's approaching the end of his ministry, his earthly ministry, you know, he's been the teacher, the rabbi, right? So in effect, he's been the master. And his followers have been the servants, learning from him, trying to figure out what he's talking about, because they were confused a good deal of the time. And as he reaches near the end of his ministry, he says this to them. This is from the gospel writer John. I no longer call you servants, because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I have called you friends. For everything that I have learned from my Father, I have made known to you. He's saying that true friends are close. They're intimate. True friends share life together, walk through life together. And the thing is that Jesus had, like us, had many different kinds of relationships, right? You likely know lots of different people. So you've got this really broad kind of circle of people that are kind of acquaintances and, you know, other interactions you might have, you may have worked with, or that you know from something social. But then you have closer relationships, right? Well, one of the things that we want to understand is that all relationships aren't the same, and we want to focus in on those relationships that are deep. And what are the characteristics of those relationships? Well, if we look at Jesus, you know, he had this kind of really broad set of people that he interacted with, but he had this other circle of people that we call the disciples. And the disciples is kind of a confusing term, because the disciple is kind of a catch-all term for kind of anyone who followed his teachings. So that was kind of a big group of people. And he would have known some of them well, some of them less well. They would have been his followers, though. He would have been their teacher. But inside of that big group of people, disciples, there was a smaller group of people. And those were the apostles. Now, the apostles were technically still disciples, but they were kind of like concentric circles, right? The big outer circle, and then you had the 12 apostles. And they were the ones who spent the most time with him. And we might be tempted to think that the 12 apostles were his closest friends. And he was certainly close with them. But it turns out that there was another group of people, or I should say a subgroup of people within the apostles that Jesus was especially close to. And that was actually Peter, James, and John. That he actually had closer experiences with Peter, James, and John than he had with the other apostles. He actually invited them into things that he didn't invite others into. And what I find kind of interesting when you look at those three, Peter, James, and John, Peter, we know, was the oldest apostle. John, we're pretty sure, was the youngest apostle. And James was John's brother. So it shows us right away that this close group of friends can be diverse. They don't have to be just like you. In fact, what I have found in my experience inside kind of this core group of people that I've had the chance to kind of get close to, we are very different, and there's something that comes from that. So what Jesus did is, as I said, he actually invited these three guys into things he did not invite others into. One of the accounts that we have of that is an event in Jesus' life called the Transfiguration. Right? The Transfiguration is this moment where Jesus kind of reveals his divinity. He actually allows the light of God to glow from him. In fact, it's even described as his clothing appeared white in a way that no human being could ever make it look white. And when he did that, he didn't take all 12 apostles with him. The only ones he invited to see that were Peter, James, and John. And he tells them explicitly that you are the only ones to know this right now, and I want you to hang on to this right now, that I've shared this with just you. And that's a characteristic of a core friendship, that you can show yourself for who you really are. Now, in Jesus' case, he's showing himself for the fullness of his glory of God. But in our case, it also means being willing to show ourselves in not our best light, but being able to do that, being able to trust that, being able to have that kind of interaction. And one of the things that Jesus does and that he shows us that I think is so powerful is that he actually invites Peter, James, and John to see him in what I consider one of the most human moments of his life. In those moments just before he's arrested, knowing that he will be captured and crucified, he invites them to share in his grief, in his pain. Because if you recall the narrative, if you've been in a church for any length of time, this will be somewhat familiar to you, is that what Jesus does is that on that final evening, that Thursday night before the crucifixion, they've sat down to supper, what we call the Last Supper. They've gotten together, they've had a meal. He's kind of told them what's going to happen next, and they don't really get it. But he's there with the 12 apostles. Ultimately, Judas goes off to go kind of tell the bad guys, so to speak, where Jesus will be. And then Jesus invites the other 11 apostles to head out with him. And what the gospel writer Matthew tells us is that then Jesus went with the apostles to the olive grove called Gethsemane. And he said, "Sit here while I go over there to pray." Now, just reading that part, it seems like, well, Jesus has invited them out here just to say, "Well, wait there, I'm going to go do something over here." But he's talking to the larger group. Because then, it says, he took Peter and Zebedee's two sons, James and John, and he became anguished and distressed. Jesus told them, "My soul is crushed with grief to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me." He felt close enough to them that in his darkest moment, where he felt, it seems like he would have felt so alone, even though he had this incredible connection to God, even though he was tapped into God in a way that we can just dream of, he wanted human contact. He wanted human interaction. He wanted his three closest friends there with him, and he felt comfortable being broken, tear-filled, grief-filled, hopeless, knowing that they are there with him. And I shouldn't have said the word hopeless, because obviously there was hope on the other side, but in that moment, it was heavy. And he trusted them enough to share all that with them. And I think this reveals a real key part about our own existence, that sometimes we can feel like that as long as I'm pursuing God, I'll be okay. Well, Jesus was tapped into God, but what did he still seek? Human relationships, right? We are built for human relationships, that we are in our richest form of our existence when we are tapped into God and tapped into one another. And what I want to encourage us to think about is that in your life, do you have a core group of friends where in your darkest moment, beyond your spouse, in your darkest moment, could you break down and cry and say, "I don't know what to do," or "I've got a mess that I created all on my own, and I can't find a way out of this, and I don't know what to do." Do you have a relationship in your life like that where you could actually open up to them and say, "I have messed up, it's terrible, or I've got really bad news, and I don't know what to do," and they would actually hear you, and they would not judge you? Now, they may hold you accountable for choices that you've made, which is actually really healthy for us, but there's a big difference between holding someone accountable for their choices and being judgmental. Because when we hold each other accountable, we recognize that, well, I need to be held to account as well, sort of thing. But do you have that kind of relationship where you could break down like this and know that it would be okay, that they would actually be there for you? And let me flip it around. Do you have people in your life that could come to you with the mess that's in their life, the breakdown that they've had, the things that they're going through, and you would hear them and not judge them? Now, you might hold them accountable, maybe not in that moment, but you could later. But could you do that without judging them? Could you do that without looking at your watch to see if I can get out of here? Because I don't want to hear this. Do you have that relationship in your life? Well, if Jesus needed those kind of relationships, we need those kinds of relationships. Real personal friends. Now, an interesting thing happens, though, is that as I hold this up as the model for what our relationships would look like, as we continue through the narrative, something kind of interesting happens. As he comes back, as Jesus has been there kind of praying, he's been praying with his friends nearby, it says that Jesus returned to the disciples and what? Found them asleep. He said to Peter, "Couldn't you watch with me even 1 hour?" So it says it says disciples here, so that's a little confusing, but remember, the disciples is a very broad term. Peter, James, and John, although they're apostles, are still disciples. So he's come back to his friends, and they were asleep. He's like, "I just wanted you to be here with me." Now, I don't think that this is a surprise to Jesus. Jesus knew human nature really, really well. So he's asked his friends to be here with him, and they were, but there was a challenge. I mean, this has been a long night. We know we're getting into the wee hours of the morning, that they've had a big dinner, they've had some wine, they've taken a walk, nice cool air, you're laying down, you're waiting. They fell asleep. But that kind of means they let him down. But what I would argue is that Jesus knew that eventually they would let him down. But even though that they would eventually let him down, he felt it was important to still have the relationship anyway. Because I think one of the things that keeps us from investing in deep relationships is our concern that people are going to let us down sometimes. And you know what? They are. We're human. We let each other down sometimes. But that doesn't mean the pursuit is not worth it. Jesus demonstrates that to us, that even knowing these guys would let him down sometimes, that it was still important to have that relationship, to invite people in, knowing that they weren't Jesus, right? They weren't going to fully rise to every occasion. But that's okay, because a relationship does not have to be perfect to be valuable. The value comes from the time you spend together, the openness of being together, the ability to have a segment of your life where you don't have to pretend to be somebody else. The ability to have a segment of your life when you are crushed or hurting or you have just messed up really bad, to have a place to be able to talk about that. Right? Jesus' brother James says, confess your sins one to another so your healing can be complete. Right? That we are designed to actually open up to one another and another trusted person. Right, that as James is describing that, he's not talking about going into a booth in the back of a church with a specially trained person. He's saying have people in your life that you can talk to and confess what you've done, because confession brings healing. If you're part of a close relationship, if you're with a group of people that you can trust, with a group of people that you've invested in to build that relationship. So I ask the question again, as I've described all of that. Do you have a relationship like that in your life? I mean, the statistics show that most of us don't. In fact, when we talk about this idea of the statistics of showing people having close friends, they're not even talking about something that deep. They're talking about people that you just kind of talk to more regularly. I think very few of us have really been able to kind of foster, build and maintain those kinds of relationships, because it's hard. It's hard to trust people, and people will let us down. So I guess the question is that if we don't have one, how do you get one? Because what we find here is that Jesus shows us what that core group of friends looks like. He's kind of demonstrated the sort of things we do, right? Be able to reveal ourselves or who we truly are. Be able to be in our grief and share that with other people. But how do we get it? Well, I think that Peter, James, and John show us how we actually create that kind of relationship. Because I think that Jesus understood that as much as he needed that relationship during his earthly ministry, he knew that Peter, James, and John would need that kind of relationship with each other following the resurrection. Right, because following Jesus' resurrection, he kind of turns the whole deal over, right, to the apostles. He says, you guys are in charge now. Go take this out there. And we know that Peter, James, and John all became kind of senior leaders in the church, which I know I make it look easy, but sometimes that's kind of hard. That was a joke, me making it look easy, just, you know, all right. I read a heavy sermon, sorry, but it's not always easy. You know, sometimes one of you might be kind of annoying sometimes. Oh, come on, that's funny. Come on. You're like, he's talking about me. Right? People are annoying sometimes. I'm annoying a lot. Right? But being part of a church, leading a church, is hard sometimes. And think about it. They were starting out with a fledgling church. And it was going to be hard for them sometimes. And they were going to deal with opposition sometimes. And it was going to be challenging. And Jesus knew that they needed to have those kinds of relationships in their life the strength and honesty of being open and honest and being able to break down with one another. So he fostered their relationship. So how did they build their close relationship? Well, Peter, James, and John got to be close friends with one another by first being friends with who? Jesus. The way that we build a close relationship with those around us, I think the most effective way to build a close relationship with those around us is to work together with others to become friends with Jesus. Now, that sounds like a kind of funny phrase, right? How do I become a friend with Jesus? Well, he actually tells us. Remember that thing I read in the beginning where Jesus says, I have called you friends, for everything that I have learned from my Father, I have made known to you. So, in other words, those who are friends with Jesus learn what he teaches. They learn what it means to follow Jesus. And I always kind of like to kind of point this out. When Jesus talks about learning what he teaches, did Jesus teach us that there were this whole bunch of rules that we had to follow? No. He says, I give you one command. Love God, love others. So Jesus actually, as he teaches to us, he's trying to give us a more full life, an uplifting life, a rich life. So those who are friends with Jesus are those who pursue his teaching, pursue understanding. But you guys have been listening to me for 4 months. Is learning the only point? No, friends with Jesus goes on to say, you are my friends when you what? Do what I command. So those who pursue friendship with Jesus are those who learn what Jesus teaches, but then what happens after that? We apply it. We do it. That the path of becoming closer to Jesus, being friends with Jesus, are those who are willing to embrace that command to love others, to love God, right? And love is not just a feeling. And love is even more than an action. Love is a decision. You decide to be loving to other people. And that drives us to action. We try to demonstrate our love for God, but how do we demonstrate our love for God? Loving others. That's what it means to be friends with Jesus, to embrace that, to make that decision, to love others, to serve one another, to care for one another, to be willing to be there when others are not willing to be there. But doing that's kind of hard, right? None of us get it right. But we need human companionship to do it. So the way that we actually build these kinds of relationships is to do exactly what Peter, James, and John did. They worked together in their pursuit of being friends with Jesus. And what I want to encourage you to do is do the same thing. To connect with a couple of other people, two, maybe three other people, and say that we're going to work together to each become friends with Jesus, to learn more deeply what Jesus teaches us, but then to go out and apply it as well, to do it together. Because that's what builds that bond. That's what draws us in. That's what draws us together. That common pursuit of pursuing Jesus together. And again, just like our relationships, we do this at multiple levels. Of course, we do this as a church as a whole. But we need something closer than that. We need something more intimate than that. We need people that we can really talk to directly. And the reason that I keep beating on this as an idea is because I kind of entirely by accident started doing this about 8 years ago. About 8 years ago, when I was down in Florida, that wasn't yet a minister, and I was going to a church where we were part of a large men's group, like 15 people in a men's group sort of thing. And one day, one of the guys in my men's group asked me to have a meeting for coffee later. So we got together for coffee, and he said, you know, I love the church, I love the men's group, but I feel like we need something deeper than this. We need to do something, I think, where we can connect more. Would you be interested in doing something like that? And I said, yeah, I think it's a great idea. And I said, but how do we move forward? Because, yeah, two is good, but, you know, more would be better. So we kicked it around a little bit, and we said, well, we feel like four is a really good size. I would say that three or four people total, five's getting kind of big. I've been in large groups like that. It changes the dynamic. I think three or four people together, really can work. And the thing we talked about is he said, well, how do we build this? How do we do this in a way that we can all grow together? And he and I knew each other, but not really that well. He says, well, I think that we should actually pursue other people that we respect, but we don't necessarily know that well. Because as we talked about it, our concern was is that if I get together with my other really close friends, well, that dynamic is already wired, right? And if two of you are already closer than the others, there's a dynamic already in place there. So what we did is, when I talked to my friend's name is Joe, Joe said, well, I've kind of picked you, so why don't you pick one person and then tell that person to go pick one person? And we all agreed that none of them would be our closest friends. And then we did that, and that built a group of four of us. And that started 8 years ago. We meet every Thursday morning at 6:30 in the morning. We all lived in the same state when we started. We were all in Florida at that time. Now one of us lives in Virginia, one of us lives in New Hampshire, another one of them lives like 2 hours away but still in Florida. So we started out meeting in person, and now we meet on Zoom. But what's really important is that we made that long-term commitment to stay together. And what you find is that when you first sit down together, you don't know each other very well. I would say it took us like a year and a half to 2 years to really start to trust each other. And that's okay, because real trust takes time. Now, what is the magic formula that we've applied to do this? Well, it's kind of what we see modeled here. It's the pursuit of Jesus. Well, what's the pursuit of Jesus look like? Well, what we do is that kind of in each kind of period of time, we pick something we want to study. We'll pick a book, we'll pick a video series, and then we decide we're going to get together for an hour. We want that hour to be really effective. So what we do is we read the book on our own, or we watch the video on our own. So we read a particular chapter or watch a particular video, and then we get together on Thursday morning. Now, when we get together on Thursday morning, we do not jump right into the study. What do you think we do? How are you doing? For real. How are you doing? How's your week going? Hey, I know your wife was sick. How's your wife doing? Hey, I'm struggling with something. I want to share this with you guys. I've done something in my life I'm not proud of. I want to tell you guys that I've done this. And what we find is that taking the time to actually be in each other's life, and we keep it succinct, we keep it tight, we keep it down to like 20, 25 minutes total, and we've been through some really big stuff. We actually have a guy who now has Parkinson's, who didn't when we started, and we're still in it together. We've had one of our guys lose his job, not voluntarily, and we ride it out together. And we do that because why? Because we're in life with one another. But then we make sure to take time to also get into the study. But when we get into the study, we don't debate the finer points of the Bible. We say, what does this study tell me about my life? What is this study calling me out on? What is the change that I should make? How does this move my heart? How does me look at something differently? And we keep that down to 30 minutes. So we got to be on point. But then we close with something that's really important. How do you think we close out? We pray for each other. Because prayer connects us. And that's what I want you to see. This is what I want you to experience in your life, is that if you can pull together a small group of people where you agree to pursue friendship with Jesus, which just means learning what he teaches us and applying it and committing to go out and apply it, while also being in life with one another and connecting with each other through prayer, it will change you. It has changed me. I wasn't always the sweet, hunk of beauty I am today. It's like I was an angry, angry person. I was filled with rage. I mean, like 12 years ago, 12 years ago, I was over the top filled with rage. And I've told you before about a man named Dan in my life who actually kind of walked me to a certain point. He got me to a place, and this group has taken me so much further. And it's through that place, it's that ability to, kind of lay your mess on the table in front of people who can just kind of help you sort it out, or sometimes just listen to you. Because one of the things we're tempted to feel like we have to do is we feel like we have to be church people, and church people have it all together. Now, you guys know that's not true, because you're church people. You know it's not actually true. But we all wrestle with that, And we always think that the mess that I'm in is the only one that's ever been in that mess, or I'm the only one that's in a mess. But that's life, man. But we need a place to sort out our mess. And we can't stand here in a room of 30 people and do that. But you can get to know two other people really well and do that. And you also need to be intentional. This has to be something that you want in your life. You can't sit back and wait until we kind of get enough momentum to start starting Bible studies. I have dreams for that one day, but we're just not there yet. So I don't want you to wait. Some of you guys are getting old. Come on, you can't wait. Oh, come on, that's funny too. Come on. Some of you know you're aging, right? Right? We're all aging, right? I'm aging. I turned, 59 in June, right? It's catching up with me, right? Oh, a lot hurts. That's all I'm going to say. A lot hurts, right? But we're aging. Don't wait, right? You're grown-ups. You know, pick some people. Just talk. Sit down with a few people for coffee and just talk about it. I mean, you don't have to be a minister, right, to figure out a decent book to read together. I mean, you want a book for soul keeping. Go find the book called Soul Keeping and sit down with a group of people and walk through that chapter by chapter. There's a video study you do if you want to do that. That book will change your life. Sit down with people that you grow with. That book will change you. There you go. I've given you your first study. And I'll write it down for you afterwards if you want me to. But pick two or three people. Generally speaking, not people that are part of your family. I mean, it seemed to work for James and John, but I think that's kind of the exception. I think it's better to not be with people you're already best friends with, because that kind of dynamic is kind of wired. But people you know, people you trust, step out to do that. It will transform your life. And you know what happens when your life is transformed? You transform other lives. And that's what we're called to do. I mean, who doesn't want to be closer to Jesus? Right? Even if you're not a Christian, even if you're not sure that he's really who he says he is, who doesn't want to live like that? But I am sure he's who he says he is. And I want all the gifts that come with that. And I want to share the gifts that come with that. And I want you to have those gifts and be that light to the world around us. And we can only fully do that when we're willing to pursue him in conjunction with relationship with one another.